Welcome to the Money Mile Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Waller, and I am happy you are here. We like to think of Money Mile as standing at the corner of triathlon and personal finance. We believe that age group triathletes are the lifeblood of our sport, and we want to shine the light on some good people doing great things. Today, our guest on Money Mile is Jamie So. Jamie is the owner of Manual Therapy Effects. She has raced the Eagleman 70.3 18 consecutive years. She's participated in 19 Ironmans, completing 16 of them, and has participated in over 70 half Ironmans. We talk a lot about Jamie's background and her story, and we had a great conversation. This is one of our special interview episodes, so it will be longer than a normal episode. There will be a brief intermission slash form check opportunity in the middle-ish as well, so look forward to that. And if you have signed up for the Money for the Long Run newsletter, you will have the show notes in your email inbox. If you are not receiving the newsletter, well, I guess you get to go find them when you log back onto your computer. But hey, while you are there, consider signing up for the newsletter and saving yourself a step next time. But for now, drop your shoulder blades into your back pockets, pick your eyes up, make sure you have a nice forward lean from the ankles, and listen up to this conversation with the one, the only, Jamie So. Jamie, welcome to Money Mile.
Hey, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Jamie, I really appreciate you carving out a bit of time to chat with our community here. And obviously, we've had a few moments here to talk about a little bit of your background and how you got started. But I heard so much good stuff here. I just wanted to jump in and let the community in and join us here. So could you just share with us a little bit about how you got started with triathlon?
That comes to be a very fun question to answer, actually. So usually how I tell this story when people ask, it kind of started out with my friend's mom asking my significant other, who was actually training his mother at the time, if he wanted to go to Hawaii to watch something called an Ironman that her son was participating in. Mom had no idea what this whole Ironman thing was, right? So my partner was kind of like, sounds interesting. He knew what it was. And he was like, got his sports with the idea, does the whole like, I'm going to go and check out to see how much flights are, just out of curiosity and this, that, and the others. Just how much would it be? Goes on the computer, does his thing. And then, you know, I'm just hanging out and he just turns to me and say, hey, want to go to Hawaii? Well, duh, who says no to Hawaii? You know, someone's going to ask you to Hawaii, wouldn't you go to Hawaii? So kind of just went. I mean, literally, we scheduled the trip like maybe 3 weeks before Ironman Kona. You know, so we went. And we didn't really know the full, like, essence of really what the Hawaii Ironman, you know, really was at that time.
The world championship component and all that magnitude.
Yeah, we didn't really realize. I mean, even then, back in, what, 2003, it wasn't massive. Like, it wasn't the so-called big deal that, you know, as it kind of grew at that moment, you know, well into the 2010s and whatnot. And we went, we watched our friend, you know, we're sitting around, we're like having conversations about, oh, could you do this? Oh, I don't know. And it's like, of course, my other half was like, oh, there's no way I can do this. I can't swim. Right. And I was like, I'm thinking, well, let's see. I swam competitively when I was younger. So I'm used to the whole like 5 to 6K swim thing. I think I can manage that. Right. At that time, I had just finished my first century. And I was like, okay, well, I did my first 100 miler. What's another 12? My butt already hurts. It's like, okay, cool. Now, the big thing was I had not run, I think, more than 10 miles in one given run at that point in my life. And when I remember doing my first 10 miler just for fun, it was like, oh, God, everything hurts. It just all hurts. Okay. So it was like, oh, that's the big question mark. But you kind of look at all these other athletes went around and in front of you going like, wow, okay, obviously they all train. And, you know, if you do the right training, then you just kind of put everything together and you just do it one day, right? Sounds pretty simple. And I was like, okay. So that kind of planted that little Ironman seed in my head, thinking to myself, like, I think I'm going to do this race one day. I'm not sure how you do it, but I'm going to figure this out. So come home, kind of like just buzz in my head. We start talking, you get into Kona. And you're going, oh, okay, you can get it through a half Ironman, qualify. All right, I'm going to start doing a half Ironman. So I wasn't messing around. I was just like, can I do this? Okay. Olympic distances were kind of a little too short. I was like, it wasn't like, oh, I wasn't going to be able to finish it. So I was like, nah, why go short? I can always go long. Set the bar a little higher. Makes you a little nervous, but it doesn't scare you off too much. I said, let me try this out. Throw myself into a half iron distance and then literally haven't looked back since. And I don't really do anything shorter than halves. I have done short stuff, but really it's just focusing on half irons and then eventually gravitated towards doing full irons. And then, yeah, I had to eventually, 5 years after starting triathlon, I stuck my foot in my mouth and finally said, all this talk of me doing an Ironman eventually, all right, let's throw the credit card down and, you know, nervously click the mouse to, you know, enter your first Ironman. And it's that in and of itself was kind of, it was scary because I remember actually signing up for my first Ironman and my hand was actually shaking on the mouse. And then you're going, oh my gosh, what have I done?
Yeah, it's about to get real.
Okay, I just committed. This is okay. Right, now we're going to get into this. So that's kind of how I got myself started into triathlon. And then, you know, eventually bite the bullet, did my first Ironman 5 years into it after doing a bunch of halves and finding out that I was actually half. I was like, oh, you know, I'm kind of sort of good at doing these things. Not great, but I know there's some room for improvement here. So I think I can get fast.
Hey, there you go. Well, I think that's great. And I think it's a great example that if you go out and you look for things that might be a little bit beyond your comfort zone, you might find some cool stuff out there. And seeing, I don't know how many people finished in 2003, back when you first saw the World Championships, but I would imagine it's certainly several hundred people. There's some evidence to that. If you see several hundred people doing something, well, yeah, I think I could do that too. It's not the, oh, hey, I heard one person someday did this one crazy thing. No, there's lots of people that can do it. And I think it kind of raises that confidence level. Say, oh, yeah, maybe that's within the realm of possibility here. I guess I like the anything is possible type of idea behind Ironman just to help increasing the scope of all of that. It sounds like you experienced that as well with that infamous visit back in 2003, starting the wheels turning and get everything going. Yeah.
I still blame my friend for his influence, if you may call it that. He just kicked back and giggles. And, you know, certainly my friend has gone off and done much more significant endurance things than just Ironman. So well beyond the thoughts of, like, you would almost deem him a little crazy.
Fair enough. And there are definitely some crazy people out there, and kudos to them as well. We got to celebrate the craziness also. There are a lot of folks that think we're crazy doing this stuff. So, hey, it's all good.
And get why he does it. That's the thing.
I've found that success means different things to different people. I'm curious, in your situation, Jamie, how are you defining success these days?
In terms of defining success, I think the obvious answer for a lot of people would be, like, you know, outcomes or performance measures. For me, I think it has become evolved out of that. Certainly those outcome and performance measures, you know, we grew up in sports doing comparative stuff. Who went faster than so-and-so, or who got better grades than the other person, right? Now it's, you know, as you age, heaven forbid, I think your perspective obviously changes. Your life experiences affect how you look at that. And I think even with going through triathlon itself and doing races and learning about, you know, things that you can overcome even in the hardest Ironman in the world, hard not by course, but hard just because you've had to overcome things during races. So we can call it overcoming adversity, or as the old analogy of lemons getting thrown in your face. You know, so it's like, what are you going to do with the lemons? I remember Mark Allen was one of my coaches back in a while ago, and I remember him saying to me that the perfect race doesn't exist. The perfect race is the one in which you overcome any adversity that comes at you in the day to get across the finish line. So it's not performance measures. It could be, oh man, you know, you had a bad swim, somebody kicked you in the face. Come out, it's like, oh man, okay, it wasn't the best time ever. Okay, put it behind you. Get on the bike. You have a flat. Your chain drops. You know, you have a mechanical. Okay, great. You know, do what you got to do to overcome it, right? And I have had both of those scenarios happen to me. I've also crashed. And then, you know, during the run, it's okay. Your legs are screaming at you. Your stomach's all sideways and upside down. You might have puked on the side of the road. You could be having some GI issues that, you know, you make the unexpected visits to the old organ jam. You know, again, it's a matter of, okay, how can you troubleshoot all this stuff and then somehow keep moving forward, going, I got to get to the finish line. Of course, there's going to be scenarios where maybe whatever might happen, you know, it's just you pull your own plug. But, you know, in terms of the defining success, it's overcoming any of the circumstances that kind of get thrown at you and really acknowledging that, hey, I did that, right? There's plenty of people out in the world that have overcome just life adversity, for instance. And I'm one of those people that, you know, I've had a lot of stuff thrown my way in my lifetime where it's just like, ah, okay. And you think, ah, oh, that's just the way my life rolled. You don't make a big deal about it. But really, you know, we should actually look at it and say, you know, I did get through that. I should be proud of that. It's not for anybody else but yourself more than anything. So it's, you know, again, a lot of people will dismiss and say, well, that's just my circumstances. I just had to do what I had to do. True, but it was, that's a pretty big deal. You know, it's like, that's tough to deal with. And then you had to go and do this, that, and the other. You know, certainly it's looking back at that type of stuff and saying, okay, yeah, I did that. Acknowledge it and say, it's okay to pat yourself on the back. You know, as long as you acknowledge it for yourself, it doesn't matter what other people think. But if you can acknowledge it, then hey, you're going to be able to say, all right, cool, I did that.
Very nice. I like it. I think that's a great perspective because there are lots of people that experience challenges and end up living their life on the sofa or just going to a 9-to-5 job and checking out for the rest of their life. But going through life, embracing that, understanding that we all have challenges, pushing through and being aware enough that you can celebrate your own successes and that's okay. So yeah, that's awesome. Thank you for the perspective there. So as I mentioned in the intro, we do like to think of Money Mile as standing at the intersection of triathlon and personal finance. So what would you say is the best investment in the form of time, energy, or money that you've made in your athletic career?
I'd say number one would definitely be finding the right, I call it team of people to surround yourself with. Now that team can consist of anybody, right? So, you know, the first one always comes into mind is making sure that your family and your friends support your obsession if triathlon ends up being a shit. Your obsession, you know, as they say, it's like, you know, the couples that try together will tend to stay together. And then the ones that tend not to will have, there might be a little bit of conflict there in terms of if not everybody is on the same page, not everybody is on board with the time commitment needed, say for iron distance, you know, certainly for shorter distance, it's a little more palatable. Family, friends, that's number one in terms of that team. The other part of it is also making sure that you, I would say, have the right medical. Make sure you got your medical team all put together, whether it's your massage person, your PT, your chiro, your docs, have them on speed dial if need be. I've certainly had to tap into that on occasion where it's like telling my bike fitter / mechanic, yeah, I had a really bad crash. Can you get my bike fixed for next weekend? And that's not funny. He was not thrilled, but certainly he definitely made miracles happen. I sort of remember that scenario. But also a coach. If you don't really have an idea of how to self-coach and you need more guidance, more structure as to what you are doing, don't be shy about reaching out to a coach who, one, understands you as an athlete and also your needs based on, you know, your lifestyle at that time, whether, you know, especially if you have like spouse, kids, other activities outside of triathlon, certainly have that coach and be able to structure your training around the things that you need to actually take care of in your other worlds. But I mean, I think it's super important that you have that team. They're the ones that will hopefully keep your best interests in mind, you know, and they fully support whatever you're going to do. You don't have that, then it's just like, kind of becomes a real lonely road. It's kind of like business ownership. It's a lonely road for business owners. And, you know, people who work regular jobs don't necessarily fully understand that. It's just like, oh, you don't understand the struggles of a business owner. The struggles are real at times. The other things would be, if you're going to do Ironman, I would say definitely hire a coach. First and foremost, don't screw around with that. If you're going to do it right and don't half-heartedly go through the training. You really need to put the miles in if you're going to do iron distance. If you kind of nailed all that other stuff down, then the other one would be just be to And if you're looking for higher performance per se, it's start looking at that low-hanging fruit, just optimizing bike fit, fine-tuning equipment, look at your day-to-day nutrition, you know, little things like that. And then if really understand the sport, if you can, like essentially nerd out is the best way I can kind of tell them it. I mean, it's just, I know for me, it was, you know, that goes with anything that I'm really interested in. It's just you throw yourself at something and try to just suck in all the knowledge you can possibly try to absorb and just think, oh, wow. And just try to get a big knowledge base of whatever you happen to be jumping into. And with triathlon, it's like, oh, okay, know about the swim. What do I need to know about the bike? How did this whole transition thing work? Oh, what are the different ways I can do this? And then you got to figure out all these other little things along the way and then go, oh, okay, logistics at a race.
Yeah, all the different bits. So yeah, you can, there's lots to nerd out on with triathlon. I think that's a great example of that. If someone said, oh, hey, you know what? I really want to complete a sprint distance triathlon and then hang up the bike forever. I want to be able to call myself a triathlete. Then awesome, more power to you. I think lots of folks can do that. If you're going to actively engage with being a long distance triathlete, I don't know of anybody that could do that successfully without nerding out a little bit and saying, oh, okay, I gotta understand my nutrition better. I gotta understand all these different things because different problems will present themselves on the race course. And if you don't have some sort of breadth of knowledge or experience of how to handle and how to problem solve those things, you can get yourself in a certainly an uncomfortable spot. I'd like to think that most of our challenges within triathlon are not life and death type scenarios. But they're serious. They're serious to us. And we want to make sure we're doing our best at this sort of thing. So I think there's definitely some benefit from nerding out and reading books, talking with folks. Hey, who knows? Maybe listen to a pretty decent podcast about triathlon. Maybe that's a good idea for you. So hopefully that's working out. So getting into a little bit more of the specifics with your athletic journey here, Jamie, you had a fantastic race at the Eagleman 70.3 this year, finished third in your age group. And I just want to double check the numbers on this. Is that marking your 18th consecutive finish at that particular race?
Yes.
So you've done that 18 times. That is awesome. Could you tell us a little bit about your experience this race and kind of how it's compared to years in the past?
So my experience with this race this year, there's like 18 versions of Eagleman I can tell you about. I can tell you about the hottest year ever. It was like racing in Hades. But this year, it's kind of like par for the course. I think I've done it so many times. It's just it's kind of like, okay, which direction is the swim going in this year? Counterclockwise or clockwise? I've got that down. It's like, I don't have to worry about the jellyfish at this time of the year, so I'm not less concerned about, okay, we wear wetsuits. So that was the other thing that always comes into play because, you know, people get a little nervous about that. But I think just for me, it's just knowing the course really well. It helps. Understanding how conditions actually play out, whether, you know, especially with Eagleman, there can be a lot of wind. And this year, not a very super windy day. It was actually a little on the cooler side than it normally is. So it was actually kind of warm. It was maybe 80 degrees. But, you know, some people I heard were like, oh, it's really hot. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is not even hot. Hot is when, go back to 2008, when the heat index was 105. And it was a death march on the run, which was a march for most of the age groupers. And I was just like, oh, this is brutal. And then you're just hoping that an aid station would just keep going for the duration of the full 13 miles of the course. And you just wanted to have somebody carry a palm leaf over you the whole time. But yeah, I mean, this race, I mean, it's my local race to me, so it's quite familiar. I know they've changed the course. Bike hasn't really changed much. Bike's been the same, I think. But the run course has certainly changed since I know Ironman took over ownership of the race. So they've made some changes to the run course. Some good, some it's like, yeah, some good, and I understand why. And some it's like, I kind of miss the old course because they turned it into a multi-loop course. So it used to just be nice out and back. And of course, there was no shade. That was what it was notorious for. And you just literally felt like you were melting on the surface of the sun. But that was what made Eagleman, Eagleman. You know, everybody knew exactly what you were getting. It's going to be hot. It was going to be humid. There might be some wind on the bike. There was always one road on the Eagleman course, Egypt Road. As soon as you turned onto it, it's like mile 40 of the course. It's like, this is awful. Headwind would just be like, okay, this is never going to end. This sucks. Yeah. But it's okay. cool. You know, it's like with anything, you know, you can't control the conditions. You just roll with it and just kind of say, okay, embrace it, go with it, see what your body wants to give you. Don't do anything stupid. And then, you know, make sure that you're taking care of yourself when you're out on the course, especially if it's super hot. There's nothing worse if you go out there and you overcook yourself and you're dehydrated and then you end up in trouble. And you have to know what those limits are. So if anything, you know, knowing how you react in hot weather.
And what you need to adjust, how you respond to that. So some people handle it really well, some people don't. Understanding yourself in those conditions. So not just a, oh, hey, it's X degrees, but how do I perform when it's this level? That's a great perspective as well. It is time for a quick form check. Money Mile is powered by Waller Financial Coaching, a full-time fiduciary financial planning firm. If you want to improve your financial form and improve your financial independence, you can get a copy of Financial Independence for Triathletes by texting MONEYMILE, one word, to 33777. You will also be added to the Money for the Long Run newsletter. Again, text MONEYMILE, one word, to 33777. Now let's check in on that running form. If you have your own form cues, please use those. If not, here are mine. Drop your shoulder blades into your back pockets. Bring your eyes up to the horizon and lean forward from the ankles for the rest of this episode of Money Mile. You have some great perspective on your own athletic experiences, maybe partially because you've had so many of them. As I understand it, you've also finished 16 Ironman, 16 full iron distance races. Is that right?
Yes.
On top of over 70 half iron distance races. You are absolutely a triathlete. So at this point, I kind of look towards the future and think, what does the future hold for you? But also, like, how have you continued to train and compete at such a high level over that long a period of time? Like, is there a secret to your success here?
There's no like magical secret. I think the biggest thing is consistency. Again, that's nothing. There's nothing magical about it, right? It's as with anything. It's always about consistency. If you can stay injury-free and you can stay consistent, then certainly you can keep doing what you do. And I think also if you can adjust your training as well as some of your nutrition, I know, you know, having gone through now, I'm in my 1, 2, 3, 3rd decade of racing. You know, started in my late 20s, now I'm in my mid-40s, at least on the female side of things, since, you know, it's like, that's what I know. You have to be able to adjust what you need to do as your own body changes. If anything, that's what I've learned in this in the short period of time. And if I were to go back into time and I would redo one thing in my athletic career, this is what I even tell some of my clients that I work with, is I would have kept stretching on a regular basis. That if I could go back to the very beginning of my athletic career, and then, you know, like in my 20s, I would have been like, I got to make sure I just, you know, several times a week, just to kind of make sure that I maintain a good chunk of my flexibility. And certainly if you neglect it and you wait and you find out and then you go, oh, I used to be able to, now I can't do that. I don't bend that way anymore. So yeah, adjusting to those body changes and then not having, I don't want to say regret, but kind of regret not doing certain little things to take help do the body maintenance. Because I think our 20-year-old mind self says, stretching, how is it a stretching? That's just a waste of time. Then you get to be like 40 or 50 or 60, and everybody's like, oh man. And then we're like, we spent all this time, extra time stretching, rolling, going to get massages, and all this extra time doing all this maintenance and body maintenance and stuff. Well, guess what? It's called aging. And that's half the battle. You have to be able to take care of your body more than anything, because, you know, you can't go at high rate of speed, we'll air quote that you were going at when you were in your 20s. I mean, yeah, you could win stuff when you're 20. You'd be 20 and stupid. You know, we've all done stupid things, you know. I've run a marathon undertrained, but yeah, that was 20-something years old. Wasn't the brightest thing, but yeah, couldn't walk for 4 days, but that's okay.
Right. Yeah, take a swing and see what happens. And hey, probably going to work out when you're younger. The ramifications of those decisions change, or at least I've found that the ramifications of those decisions change as I've aged. Like, oh yeah, on any given day, like, I've just got to give that a little bit more thought, because I might have a bright idea that could end up really bad, or I might really be regretting that. So it's like, I'm just going to pause and think about that before I decide to go hop on a 3-hour gravel ride with some buddies when I haven't been on that bike in 6 months. Oh yeah, I'll just think about that a little bit before I do it. All right. So from your perspective, Jamie, what would you consider to be the most underrated aspect of triathlon, or something you think that other triathletes should know more about?
Most underrated aspect of triathlons, I would say, is the so-called life lessons that you can take away from the sport. You know, whether they're big worldly lessons, you know, like you can only control the things you can control, or learning about stuff that's like so deep within yourself that you never necessarily thought was going to be possible within yourself. You know, there's this weird inner strength that some people may find. And it's like, oh my gosh, that was the hardest thing ever, but I somehow dug it out. And then you all of a sudden realize it's like, I'm a stronger person than, you know, what I thought I was or whatever. You know, just really understanding just the different things that can occur. It's like, what's talking to you in that moment? Even when you're racing, you can learn so much about yourself even. I mean, I guess one race would be like, you know, you're out there on the course and you're having not the best race in the world. And you're mentally just in the dumps. Just, this sucks. I got my family's watching. They're standing there waiting for me. They're out here cheering me on. And God, I feel like I'm letting them down, you know? And then even though you feel disappointed, right? And you think this perception of, oh, I'm just a big disappointment to them because I didn't have my best performance. And you're walking the course, you know, feeling sorry for yourself. And it's like, no. The perspective is they're not disappointed at you. They're disappointed for you. They're kind of living their life a little bit for you and, you know, and wanting to say, oh my gosh, when my athlete's successful, I'm successful. When my athlete's down, oh man, they want to be out there trying to figure out how can I help them raise them up a bar. Granted, you can't pace anybody or walk with them during an Ironman because, you know, they'll be like, hey, how about DQ you for assisting me with what? Dribbling my feet, you know, trying to get to my aid station. But yeah, I mean, it's going through those dark moments when you really, and you could be on the other side of that course and your family's like on one end and you're just like, oh, and you're just in a really bad place mentally and you're just trying to dig it out, dig it out, dig it out. And I've had moments where I remember one of my Ironmans where there was this other age grouper. He was kind of jogging the whole time. And I don't think he realized I was on the second lap. He was on his first. And he comes chirping by me. And I keep seeing him because we keep passing each other. And he's having these little conversations with me, just like, I'm beyond you all night long. I'm like, okay. So we keep passing each other. And then he's ahead of me at one point on the lap and sees me and I'm walking. He goes, all night long. So it's interesting. You know, I had another triathlete friend of mine who said, you know, you might find that you're going to be in one of these dark places during a race. And, you know, sometimes you just find this little chirpy bird angel that just decides he's going to hang out with you for a little while, whether it's spiritually or just kind of on the course, literally. And they literally chirp at you. And this guy was chirping at me the whole time. And eventually I was like, I hit the last 5K and I was like, I got to go. And I literally just started running. And I caught up to this guy and I ran. He didn't realize it was me. And I ran past him. I yelled at him. I was like, come on, man, let's go. And he's just like, he's just looking around. Like, I just kept going. I like literally quit walking the last 5K of that Ironman just because I was like, I'm so over this. I just want to be done.
There are definitely lots of life lessons that you can learn from triathlon as a whole. And I think for me, one of the things that I reflect on often is that if we do hard things, we increase our capacity to do hard things. And when I'm out, you know, on a hard workout or whatever, and I think, oh, I got to do this set for 2 minutes. And I'm like, I get in the middle of that. And it's like, it's 2 minutes, but it feels so hard at the time. Oh my gosh, my legs are burning. I can't breathe. What's going on? It's 2 minutes. I've done an Ironman. I can do anything for 2 minutes. And you build that level and that confidence to be able to continue to push through. And then, hey, you know what? I did that 2 minutes. All right, next one's 3 minutes. Game on. Let's go. You build that confidence over time. And you know, a lot of folks don't really get that. And we can talk about, you know, athletic examples, but the same thing happens professionally as well. You've hit a hard spot professionally. You're like, no, I can do hard things. I can do this. Okay, let's figure it out. Let's problem solve. We build some skills. We figure this stuff out. There are lots of lessons that we can learn from this. So So what has been your biggest mistake that you would say while training or racing?
Crashing on my bike.
Okay, all right. Well, now I'm intrigued. Tell me a little bit more about how this went down, literally, I'm guessing.
So this actually happened during racing, not necessarily during training, oddly enough. Although I've had bees run into me during training. That's a different story for a different day. But crashing. So we were actually at Triple T. It was the third day of the Triple T that, you know, I'm not sure if you're familiar with American Triple T. So American Triple T is, it's a 3 days worth of triathloning, 4 races in 3 days. So you do a super sprint on Friday evening. You do back-to-back Olympics on Saturday. So you, in the morning, you do an Olympic distance. In the afternoon, you do a modified Olympic distance where you start with the bike, time trial start. Then you swim and then run. And then on the last day, you do a half iron distance. Essentially, most of the run course, you're going over the same patches course for the whole weekend. And most of it's trail. So, which, you know, it's like, okay, and it's a lot of climbing. So during the third day, about 13 miles into the bike, and I'm pretty gnarly descent, you know, there's like probably 200 of us doing this event. And going down this step, and there are little narrow roads, tree line and whatnot, going down, and I was like, I'm not bombing this. So usually I'm pretty decent bike handler, so I'm cruising down. I was like, man, I'll be conservative, kind of feathered the brakes a little bit just to control the speed, and didn't quite see the rock in the middle of the road. And bam, hit the rock. So I'm holding on to my bars thinking I'm trying to save it. And next thing I know, I'm going down and hit the deck at 30 miles an hour, according to my Garmin, and kind of tumbled my way into the ravine on the side of the road. And I'm like, I'm laying in the ravine on the side of the road, like, it's kind of soft or it's kind of wet. Like, where am I? You know? And of course, I'm kind of in my brain. I'm going like, okay, inventory, body check. Is everything still functioning? I remember hearing my helmet skid. And then I finally opened my eyes and like the roadway is literally at my eye level. Here's the blacktop right on my eye level as I looked up. I'm like, okay, I'm no longer on the road. This is not good. And then moving my limbs around, like, okay, nothing's broken, I don't think. And I'm like, okay. And I look and I'm missing some skin on my arm and my kit's all tore up. I'm like, wonderful. And I just kind of laid there for a minute. And then luckily there was a dude that was behind me. And it happened to be the guy I was rack next to all week. So we kind of knew each other. And he saw me
Take that tumble.
And he stops. And he's helping me out. He's checking my bike out. He was like, don't move if you don't want to. That's what he's telling me. I was like, he was really actually really good about how he actually interacting with me at that point because he didn't know what was hurt. So he's helping me out of the ditch. He's like, you're just grabbing on my arm. He didn't want to like pull me up or anything because he didn't know what hurt. Get up there. There you go. So suffice it to say, as much as it sucked because I wasn't winning my age group, and I had to like face the fact of like, this was going to be like my first DNF ever racing. I was like, what do I go? Do I not go? You know, so it's like, oh, I just can't imagine the thought of running 13 miles because I still only 13 miles into the bike. I don't know what the rest of the bike course looks like. I know it's supposed to be really hilly. But yeah, I mean, my body essentially started kind of going into shock a little bit. And then I actually was able to get myself back on my bike and kind of get down the rest of the descent pretty carefully. I was still was just shaking the whole time. I think it was getting cold and everything. I knew if I got to an intersection, there would be like a cop there. And just so happens that my other half, like maybe within a few minutes, comes up and he's like, oh, somebody's got a flat. And he sees it's me. And he's like, slams on his brakes, U-turns back up the hill, comes up towards me. He's like, Jay, what happened? I don't want to overstate the obvious here, honey. Thinking I was going to be hospitalized or something. And he was married. He was concerned. It was a very like, loud concern. But, you know, he kind of tracked me down the rest of the hill. And then he took all of my nutrition bottles and left me with the police officer because he felt okay enough to do that. And was like, I'm going to go. It's like, give me your drinks. So I was like, oh, okay. That's I'm not using them. And then off he went. So I was like, missing a scan and bruised ribs later. I was like, okay, great. Shockingly, I actually turned around a week later and raced Eagleman with bruised ribs and healing road rash and all kinds of fun stuff. Because I was like, I have a streak I have to keep intact.
I was just wondering if this was the streak. Was that when you called your bike mechanic fitter guy? Like, hey, I just crashed. Can you hook me up for next week? Yeah, all this story's come together. Here we are.
Yeah, that was it. That was exactly what it was. And then he was like, oh, man. So, I mean, my poor bike sitter, he literally worked on my bike because I had to get a new front end. And he spent his day off tearing my bike back down, putting it all back together. And again, he's like, well, I'll give you till Saturday morning to get it all set up. Bring it to this. I can come by and pick it up from the shop. Yeah, and then ironically ended up actually qualifying at that Eagle Man, because that was the year that 70.3 Worlds was in Chattanooga. And me and my other half, we were trying to qualify together. So we were like, yeah, let's go if we both go. And I was like, well, now that it crashed, I was just like, I'm not sure what it's going to turn into. So I was literally racing at 85%, I think, at Eagle Man, still managed fourth in my age group. Took the qualifying slot for Chattanooga, and I was like, sweet, bonus points.
Nice.
Yeah.
That is great. Well, I'm glad that worked out so well. You didn't break your streak. You're able to continue with that. And ultimately, there wasn't any lasting permanent damage other than some bike repair. So I'm glad that you ended up with results that you were still comfortable with and healthy. For those of us that have been through a significant bike crash, it doesn't take too much reflection to think, oh, wow, that could have gone a whole lot worse than it did.
I was lucky.
Yeah, count our blessings. When you think about your trajectory over your triathlon history, has there been a turning point for you in regards to your training?
Oh, yeah. When I hired my coach, when I started doing Ironman distance, I hired my coach that first year doing Ironman, really understanding, oh, okay, that's what I got to do. So I started doing higher rate training, which is kind of Mark Allen's thing. That really elevated everything for me in terms of performances and how I'm training, and then really kept me off the injury sidelines for a good chunk of time just because of the style of training that you have to do with Mark Allen's program. It more or less kind of follows like the 80-20 rule. Most, rep that everybody touts, 20% is in that higher intensity range versus the 80% you kind of want to hang at your slow, steady, steady distance stuff. But I mean, heart rate, certainly that's one variable to train by. And I know other people, they train by power numbers. So it just kind of all depends, what kind of works for you. And that seemingly that worked really well for me. And, I know that Mark Allen, way back when, when he had his age group, his elite age group team, he was sending, 20, 25 athletes to Kona annually. So it was just kind of like, well, something works, so why not, right? Certainly it worked for me. I've had other people, they may not necessarily, they either don't keep themselves disciplined enough to stick with the program to allow it the physiological changes to happen. So that they're like, I couldn't do it. So it's like, well, you have to allow it to time. Physiology doesn't change automatically. It takes months for it to transition over. And you'll notice changes within 4 to 6 weeks by going in that methodology. So, Mark Allen, I think he followed the Mapitone method is really what his base, his mainstay for his training philosophy is. So, and I know there's some controversy with it. I know some people are like, junk science and blah, 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 blah. I was like, hey, well, works for some. It's not necessarily going to be up everybody's alley. And certainly, find things that work. But that's probably the big one that helped propel me from, say, being kind of front of the middle of the pack to kind of pushing to well into the front of the pack and maybe closer to the tippy point, not at the absolute tip, but, over the 5% and at the 1.
But that working with the coach, getting some different perspective and the heart rate training aspect of things and understanding that better and being consistent with it. It sounds like there's multiple things being able to go in there. It's not like, oh, I trained by heart rate for a week and everything was wonderful. It's being able to do that consistently over time and see that work. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah. So also part of that is also just trusting that process. You start doubting the process, then you're going to start running into problems because, then you're not buying into it. Right. And it kind of goes with anything. You have to trust the process and kind of go, okay, I'm going to trust this process. I'm going to follow all the steps necessary to get the outcome that I want. Coincides with even then in the world that I work in, physical therapy, it's you gotta trust the process. Healing body parts doesn't happen overnight. Everybody wants an instant fix. I want now. This is not Amazon Prime, right? This is no, you the long game. You have to do all the things that you have to do to allow your body to make those changes. And unfortunately, we can injure ourselves in an instant, but it seemingly takes a very long time just to recover from those injuries. And it worsens as we age.
Yes, it does have a tendency to increase in magnitude with that. So, Jamie, I very much appreciate you carving out time and chatting with us today. I know we're running a little bit short on time here, but what would you consider to be the thing that you would like the world to know most about you and your journey within triathlon?
See, I'd say I'm a big believer that if you put your mind to anything, that you can pretty much have anything you want in your life. You know, and I kind of alluded to this, like, you know, in like my life, like so many others, has been filled with plenty of adversity and a lot of persistence to overcome a lot of life's little lemons that get thrown your way, you know, and having the determination and self-belief and just being able to figure it all out is huge. I've put myself through all my schooling, started my own practice, became a pretty good triathlete along the way, doing that self-learning thing, geeking out, you know, with triathlon and just going, oh yeah, you know, again, that's kind of like buying all in, as we kind of were talking about earlier. And even, you know, with my career, that fulfills the need to help people achieve their own goals and activities, while triathlon allows me to be, you know, a little kid again, while scratching a little bit of my own competitive itch and then being able to test my own limits. And in a lot of ways, they are actually both reflections of each other as to who I am as a person. Yeah, so each process is, they kind of overlap and they're very similar.
Interesting. Jamie, I very much appreciate you sharing all that you have about your experience within triathlon. I do also want to open up the floor to you. It sounds like you have a very interesting structure to your practice, but I also just want to learn a little bit more about what you have going on in your world. Could you share with us a little bit about that side of things?
Sure, Justin. Be happy to. You know, as far as what goes on outside of the triathloning that I usually do, seems like I spend more time doing that than, say, working. What I do outside of tries is I've been in private practice and physical therapy for over 20 years, which is probably about as long as I've been doing triathlon. You know, what I do in my work is I do specialize in working with active 40-plus-year-olds and athletes, including some high school kids here and there, who are active and want to just stay active or just get back to their sports or activities of choice, you know, with minimal downtime and absolute minimal frustration. As you know, if anybody who's dealt with injury can be one of those, oh my goodness, this absolutely sucks, this is taking me forever. But a lot of people see me for their general aches, pains, injuries as they suffer with their activities and just trying to stay active and healthy. So anything really below the neck, even post-op folks that are the general injury issues that I will, you know, work with. And most of the folks I end up working out are what we would deem our weekend warriors. Whether we as triathletes want to call ourselves weekend warriors, I don't know if we really are wholeheartedly weekend warriors because we train 5, 6, 7 days a week in some cases. So it goes from my weekend warriors to hardcore athletes to pretty much just folks who simply just want to be able to move and age well better and just stay active. So, you know, my primary focus is individualized one-on-one hands-on treatments that are personalized to meet every client's, you know, needs and wants. As a PT practice, I'm always happy to help people who are frustrated and dealing with their own injuries or just trying to deal with being in a system, healthcare system, that's not always able to hear what everybody's actual needs are. So, you know, as an athlete and a patient, I've been through my fair share of the healthcare system, but also as a practice owner, I see that things can be done a little bit better because clients deserve better and they deserve to be heard as well as seen as a whole. So working with motivated clients and watching them meet their goals is by far one of the more rewarding aspects of my career. So certainly if any of your listeners need a different set of eyes on a particular concern with an ache or a pain, you know, they're more than welcome to reach out to me, you know, either through email, through my website. I do also offer that discovery visit thing that is basically 100% complimentary if you just want to kind of pick my brain for a little bit and do a little Q&A with me. And I'm always happy to help in any way with what people need, particularly if they're, you know, kind of getting stuck. And that's typically a lot of those people end up fighting me because they've gotten stuck in some pattern of the healthcare system where it's like, okay, so-and-so's not listening or this isn't working. And it's like they've expended all their own mental capacity of trying to manage it. And they're just like, I just need somebody that's just going to be able to help me fix this. And inevitably, they end up in my office. So
this is how that works sometimes.
Yeah, I'll take it.
So that's interesting. So you had mentioned a one-on-one, hands-on approach is very important to the work that you do. And a lot of the Money Mile community is across the country. So if they may not be able to walk into your office, you would still be open to having a conversation with them, either via email or starting a conversation there, see if there might be some ways that you could help.
Sure. I mean, sometimes it could just be one simple little thing. You know, it's just like, okay, you've done the whole Dr. Google, Dr. YouTube, and Dr. Instagram search of trying to sort your problem out. But it's like, okay, yeah, there's PTs out there that put all the material in on YouTube. Oh, try this. It's like, yeah, but one, are you doing it right? Two, is it really for the issue that you're dealing with? Okay. And how do you know it really is the issue that you think it might be because you've looked at the vast world of Dr. Internet going, this is definitely what I have. Are you absolutely sure about that? Because I don't want to say it, but I will. It's me being the healthcare professional. It's like, there's some legitimate pieces of paper that hang up in my office that say, yeah, I kind of know what I'm talking about. And yes, the information on the internet is free. However, these are problems that people have, you know, conditions and injuries and whatever that I see every day. The internet is not interactive. It's not going to say, oh, yes, because you have this, whatever you do, don't go through AI. Oh, my gosh. Apparently, ChatGPT comes up with some very interesting answers that may not actually be completely factual and true towards whatever you're asking it. That's crazy. So certainly, you got to be kind of careful with what resources you're tapping into and go straight to the person and ask them, because that's what they do all day.
Wonderful. Well, and I very much appreciate your expertise. I know over the years, physical therapists have played a significant role in my health and well-being. And I hope that folks in the Money Mile community, if they should find themselves in a situation where they need some physical therapy or just a second opinion about what they've got going on and how they're doing it, they'd feel comfortable reaching out to you. And we'll include in the show notes ways to contact you directly.
All right. Sounds good, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Jamie So for coming on the show. We really appreciate her time and all the knowledge that she shared. I hope you found this conversation valuable, and if you did, please share the podcast with your training buddies and friends. Remember, if you work out, everything else will too, and we look forward to talking with you next time on Money Mile.